Does anyone else feel like we're living in a chapter out of 1984? Really? I mean, we redefine words and then we accept that whatever the redefinition of the word is reality. Think about it. A recession is no longer a recession because, you know, a recession is way too complicated of a concept to describe in a single sentence. In classic economic terms, a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth. Every single economics textbook on the face of the earth defines recession that way. Except, of course, in the crease in the multiverse, which is also known as the White House. Here you go.
In terms of the technical definition, it's not a recession. The technical definition considers a much broader spectrum of data points.
We're seeing a slowdown. We're likely to see some slowing of job creation. But I don't think that that's a recession.
Oh, I get it. But what is it if it's not exactly a recession? The funny part about this whole thing is they're explaining what the effects of a recession are without calling it a recession. Even the book Economics for Dummies defines a recession as two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth. Regardless, though, it doesn't really matter what the White House or the crease in the multiverse is calling a recession because all of us are already feeling the effects of it. We're paying over $4 a gallon per gas when a year ago it was way under $3. The cost of groceries has increased exponentially, and it is far more difficult to find the goods that we want to buy, thus dramatically increasing the price of them. So, if you have a couple of quarters of negative economic growth, goods are scarce, and there's massive money printing, you have, by definition, an inflationary recession. You can put lipstick on however many pigs you want, but they're still pigs. But this isn't the only term that we've redefined. Now, we can call men women, and that automatically makes them a woman. Or we can call politicians smart, and, well, no, that one doesn't work. Maybe it will in the future. Well, good morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another installment of Weekend Update. From high above all other pedantic and puerile forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming. One other term that we've apparently redefined is the word debate. To the 1828, it says, a speech or discourse composed according to the rules of oratory and spoken in public. Oh, wait, no, that's not the definition at all. But it would seem that's exactly what's happening at things that we are calling debates. You see, we can define whatever it is that's happening as something else, and then automatically it becomes that other thing. A debate is defined as contention in words or arguments, discussion for elucidating truth, strife in argument of reasoning between persons of different opinions, each endeavoring to prove his own opinion right and that of his opposer wrong. Clearly, that is not what is happening at all of these things that we are calling debates. They are, at best, orations, which was the first definition that I read to you. It's really no different than a politician standing on a street corner espousing what he believes and thinks. There's no difference between that and what happened last night at the Wyoming public BS, quote-unquote, gubernatorial debate. The only thing that anyone is really going to remember out of last night's Wyoming public BS, quote-unquote, debate is where Rex Rammel erroneously accused Brent Behan of not having the qualifications to run for governor. That, and nobody really even scratching the surface of Governor Gordon's handling of the COVID plandemic. There were a couple of back and forths concerning the closure of businesses that happened during the pandemic. Brent Behan brought up the point that there were over 6,100 businesses that closed during the pandemic, some of which probably will never open their doors again. And then there was this little gem from Governor Gordon.
I want to make sure that if you remember one thing this evening, you remember I am the only person on this stage who has a proven track record of standing up for your rights.
That's a little disingenuous. What about Brent Behan's 30 years in the military? Does that not count for standing up for our rights? And what about the whole April 2021 article in the Cowpie in which you said that you hadn't rescinded the emergency order because of federal funding? It seems there are some question marks surrounding that whole last statement, Governor. But the truth is, about the only thing that anybody is going to remember about this oration, debate, is when Rex Rammel challenged the residency of Brent Behan. Here it is.
Qualifications of governor. No person shall be eligible to the office of governor unless he be a citizen of the United States and a qualified elector of the state who has attained the age of 30 years and who has resided 5 years next preceding the election within the state or territory, nor shall he be eligible to any other officer during the term for which he was elected. Colonel Behan, you haven't lived in the state for 5 years. You're not eligible to be the governor. And I ask you tonight, patriot to patriot, to honorably bow out of this race and keep this out of the courts. It is very clear, the language is precise. You have to reside inside the state for 5 years. And there's no military exemption in the Constitution. You're not eligible. I ask you, for the people of Wyoming, for this race, to honorably bow out and let Mark Gordon and Rex Rammel go to the polls.
Here is Colonel Behan's response to that.
Under that, out of the same Constitution, in Article 6, Section 7, just because I decide to serve my nation, to serve our country, I do not lose my residency there. Okay, this was cleared with the Secretary of State's office, lawyers across the state, and also with elected representatives right now. I chose to serve this nation, something you did not do. And I am very proud of doing that. And I will serve this nation, okay, with the honor and distinction that I did as a Marine Corps officer.
After the debate last night, I had a chance to catch up with Colonel Behan. Here's what he had to say about that exchange.
You know, Dave, I feel good. I felt a lot more comfortable than the first debate. I think a lot of the questions were real odd questions. They were more general election questions. You know, I know where I want to take this state. I know where I want to take the economy, the budgeting process, property taxes, etc. You know, with one of the candidates, specifically Rex Rammel, his disdain for military came out tonight. You know, he's threatened suing. Now he's going to sue for qualifications. There's no question under the Wyoming Constitution that I am qualified to be the governor of this state. And, you know, I believe, hands down, you know, other than a horse to water, I have no clue what Rex has led. He's always talking about leadership, but he doesn't know the first thing about it. And, you know, this is a man who's proposing that we become a 49-star nation. He can do that because he's never been on both sides of the rifle. And I tell you, once you're on both sides of the rifle, the last thing you want to do is go down that road. We tried this in the 1860s, and there's no reason to do what he wants to do. We have a great nation. The problem with it is the federal government. So we got to stick together. We got to do it. But we cannot do it the way Rex wants to do it.
There you have it. Well, I'm sure that'll probably be the only thing out of this series of orations that anybody in Wyoming remembers. No doubt, though, there will be some fireworks when three of the candidates get together in Buffalo next week to debate. I think I might make some popcorn for it. Coming up, I have an interview with Don Odom, who is running for the House District 61 down in Cheyenne. You might remember Don, I mentioned him last week after we had interviewed Daniel Singh for the same office. And we'll do that after the break. We'll get back to the program in just a second, but first, a completely obscene profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. It's summertime, which also means that it's construction season. And so you don't want to put off that building you've been thinking about for yet another year and allow all of your toys to get covered with snow. Oh yeah, I hate to break it to you, but that white stuff is coming. So what you should do is call my friends Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings, 307-674-2532. These guys are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do it better than anybody else around. So give Nick and Jesse a call, 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. It's 6:05 on a Saturday morning. You know what I'm thinking about? Hot wings. Hot wings from the Wing It food truck. They make the most amazing hot wings in the state of Wyoming. And not just hot wings. They have other flavors, too. I personally recommend the garlic parmesan wings. They're incredible. So to figure out where that truck is going to be, you go to cowboystatepolitics.com underneath the sponsors tab, and you can find their schedule there. That's the Wing It Food Truck. Next Thursday, August 4th, the Patriot Conservatives of Wyoming will sponsor the Bighorn Mountains gubernatorial debate. It's going to be held at the Bomber Mountain Civic Center and start around 5:30. It'll be live streamed on cowboystatepolitics.com as well as broadcast on KBBS 1450 AM and 103.5 FM. Keep your eyes peeled on the Cowboy State Politics Facebook page, and I'll post the live stream link there. After this past Thursday's debate over in Riverton, I would expect there will be some fireworks, so make sure you don't miss it. And now, back to the program. As I mentioned last week, there was a bit of controversy in the House District 61 race. Candidate Daniel Singh had told Cowboy State Politics that he's not in favor at all of the legalization of marijuana. And then, come to find out later, there were some statements that had been made on his Facebook page to the contrary. So I decided to interview his opponent, Don Odom. And I had a chance to speak with him last week. Here it is. I'm joined by Don Odom. Don is running for the Wyoming House of Representatives out of House District 61 in Laramie County. How's it going tonight, Don?
Going great, Dave.
As this is your first time on the program, why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, well, I'm a truck driver in the oil fields of Wyoming. I've been interested in politics my whole life. 1980, my first election, I voted for Ronald Reagan. My whole family was Democrat and thought I was nuts. But when he ran for his second term, my dad voted for him also. And I've been voting conservative ever since. The one time I didn't, I voted for Ross Perot for president because I felt like George H.W. Bush had let us down and lied to us with his no new taxes pledge. And, you know, later on, learning the history of it, he was trying to work with the Democrats and was told he got, you know, promises from them. But anyway, at the time I said, you know, he said one thing and did another. So I voted against him, and that's when Bill Clinton got in. And so that's kind of the whole basis for my campaign is say what you mean and mean what you say. I've been so disappointed with so many Republicans over the years that talk the talk, but then when the media criticism gets tough or the celebrities come out piling on them, they crumble and fold or apologize for what they said. And you know, have a spine. That's all I'm asking. I respected a Democrat. I don't know if you remember him, Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah.
He was from the Midwest. Illinois, Ohio, somewhere in that area. And nutty as a fruitcake, but you always knew where you stood with him because he didn't try. Well, let me say nutty as a fruitcake, in my opinion, politically. I didn't agree with his ideas, but I respected him because you always knew where he stood. He didn't try to say one thing and do another. You knew where he stood on the issues, and he didn't try to double talk you into thinking he believed something else. And that's all I ask of anybody on either side, you know, just be upfront and honest. And we're not always going to agree. Like I told you earlier, you know, if two people agree all the time, one's not thinking for themselves. And the thing is, so we know there's going to be disagreement based on that, but we need to learn again how to disagree agreeably. You know, everybody's at each other's throats now, and I blame the politicians and the media for most of that. And our society as a whole is not as polite as it used to be. You know, that's a discussion for another day, I guess. But I just believe in standing up for what I believe. And the reason I'm running is, like I said, for years, I keep getting disappointed and frustrated and, you know, ready to throw something through the television. And I came to Wyoming in 2014, fell in love with it. The company I was working for shut down, so I went back to Alabama for a little while and was just miserable there. I loved Wyoming, and I came back in 2017, and I've been here in Cheyenne ever since, and I'll spend the rest of my life in Wyoming. I'll go to Alabama to visit, but I won't never live there again. But I got here and started looking into the politics. I had been in the Tea Party in Alabama and was really involved with that and considered running for office. But I said, you know, I'm a truck driver. Who's going to take me seriously, you know, running for office? But then I get here to Wyoming and I'm discovering, particularly here in Laramie County, the Republicans are not all that you might think they would be conservative wise. They're a lot of them claim to be, but when you look at their voting scores, it just doesn't add up. And then last year, a truck driver beat the second most powerful politician in New Jersey for their, I believe it was state Senate. And I got to thinking, you know, well, maybe it's possible. And I considered running against Landon Brown. I was in his district and figured out, you know, like many of the Wyoming politicians, yeah, he's got an R by his name and he talks like he's a conservative. But if you look at the voting record, that tells the tale.
No, he's nowhere close to a conservative.
Exactly. But then they redrew the district lines and all of a sudden I'm in a district with no incumbent. And I said, well, I'm going to make sure there's at least one real conservative in this race. So I jumped in, and then I had two more opponents jump in. And so anybody that's out there listening, I'll just tell you right now, you know, you're probably thinking, well, why should I vote for you over these two guys? Well, I'm a truck driver, but I've got principles. I've been a conservative consistently ever since I could vote at the age of 18. Both of my opponents are 25 years old. And number one, I don't believe there's enough of life experience there to be making decisions for over 500,000 people in the state of Wyoming. I'm 59 years old. I've had to work and support a family. I've had to deal with policies of the government to take money out of your pocket. I've had to struggle at times. I know what all that's like. And I've been a consistent conservative, you know, from the start. I'm sure both of these guys would claim to be a conservative. Matthew Malcolm was an intern for Dan. Did he live in the district or not? Zwanzer. And he's supporting him. Every function I've seen Matthew at, Dan was there also for at least a few minutes. And he didn't even vote in the GOP primary in 2020. And I'm not just saying that off the top of my head. He wasn't on the GOP data list, and I verified it with the Laramie County clerk. He only voted in general in 2020. He didn't bother to vote in the GOP primary. So last time I looked, he wasn't even registered as a Republican. Maybe he had to before he filed. I'm not sure for the primary. I believe that you do for the Secretary of State's rules. But, you know, that information wasn't available the last time I looked, and I haven't bothered to look again. But, you know, so to me, you didn't even bother to vote 2 years ago. And Mr. Singh, you know, I've met him and he's told me that he's changed his opinions. But, you know, 3 years ago, he was touting Bernie Sanders and socialism. It's down in black and white. It's on Facebook. And, you know, then when he was on your show earlier, he was saying it was kind of tricky the way he worded it. There was like part of it that sounded like he said his opponents were for legalization of marijuana. And then it kind of sounded like he backed off a little bit. I'm not quite sure on that, But I do know a year ago, he was for full legalization himself. And then he cited the Wyoming Constitution as to what section he believed covered medical marijuana, which he also believes should be legalized.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
So now you also are a proponent of marijuana, aren't you?
I'm a proponent of medical marijuana.
Okay,
so I believe that a plant that's created by God, if it's used for good and monitored correctly, that it should be there for people that need it, because I have seen it with friends and family members help them with pain management and quality of life when they've had cancer or PTSD. And I believe that you know, we're grown-ups, and if you say, well, we can't do medical marijuana because people will abuse it, well, where do you stop? Do you take away guns? Do you take away liquor? Do you take away fast cars because people abuse all of those?
Okay, well, let's hold on just a second.
Jump in.
You mentioned that you said that you're totally in favor of medical marijuana. So what is to prevent medical marijuana from getting into the hands of children?
Well, I mean, that's up to the parents. And, you know, there's good parents and bad parents. It's just like liquors, just like guns. Children get into those because parents don't take the proper precautions. And you can't put everything in the lap of government.
Right. But, you know, you can look at several other states that have legalized marijuana entirely, and many of them started with medical marijuana. I mean, don't you see this as just kind of like the proverbial camel's nose underneath the tent? That, you know, it's just one more step towards full legalization?
It could be if it's not handled correctly. I believe one way that we could prevent that would, when we write the bill that, you know, I would want to see become law, that we would include a provision that, you know, this is what it covers for, you know, every how many years, decades, whatever. I mean, there's been laws written in that form before where it couldn't be revisited for, say, 100 years or 50 years or whatever. And, you know, I don't know all of the ins and outs of creating legislation yet, but I do have integrity and principles, and I'm willing to listen to all sides. And if I decide I'm wrong, I'm not scared to stand up and say, hey, you've convinced me I'm wrong on this.
Okay. Well, one of my problems with the whole medical marijuana thing, and to be honest with you, Don, you know, I completely understand your argument, but one of the big things that troubles me about it is the, well, first, it's a narcotic, but the big one is the level of bureaucracy that's going to be needed to monitor it. You know, if you look at the State Liquor Commission, you know, their budget is around like $275 million a year, and only $75 million or a small percentage of that comes back in the form of profit, and that's the booze. The other $200 million or, you know, about there, I mean, that's all administrative costs. So to regulate medical marijuana, I mean, I think you're talking about a gigantic bureaucracy. I mean, isn't that just growing government at an exponential scale?
It could be. I don't see why we couldn't roll that into the liquor board's, I guess you'd call it job duties, and put them over it. And so then you've already got people in place. You're not hiring new people unless it was like so huge, I guess, that you had to. You know, this is kind of uncharted territory for me on figuring out, you know, how to regulate it. But I believe, you know, if people sit down and talk about it, we can figure out a way without growing government hugely.
Okay. All right. One more question about it, and then I'll leave you alone on the pot.
Okay. We're cool, man. I told you. Any question on any subject, we're good.
All right. One of the big problems in Wyoming is we have a habit of picking winners and losers. You know, we have the, you know, the Wyoming Business Alliance and all sorts of state groups that provide funding for, you know, for different ventures in the state. Well, you know, if you legalize marijuana, you're saying that only medical companies can profit from that commodity, and, you know, other companies can. I mean, don't you worry about the fair treatment of business when we're, if we were to legalize medical marijuana?
Let me think about that a second. Well, I mean, I'm not a guy that believes in raising taxes, but, you know, there would be license fees if you're going to have a business running it. And that's basically another tax, a license fee. You know, you've given me some good things to think about. You know, I've basically been focused on, okay, I've seen it help people, and I'd like to see it help people here. I haven't really looked at the nuts and bolts of implementing that. And, you know, as a legislature, I would have to for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. So, all right. Well, let's switch gears a little bit here.
Okay.
The biggest component of the Wyoming state budget is education. And the truth is, we don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem.
Exactly.
And, you know, I just had dinner with Representative Mark Jennings, and, you know, his main point was that if we don't get a handle on our education budget here real quick, there's a distinct possibility that it could bankrupt the state. So my question to you is, should you get elected, you know, what are a couple of things that you think we could do to rein in our gigantic education budget?
Well, number one, we need a total audit of the education budget and the whole education system. You know, I have not been able to get a concrete figure on how much administration do we have versus actual teachers. I was at a gathering last night with one of the candidates for the state. And the title escapes me. They don't call it a state school superintendent here like they do in Alabama. Thomas Kelly.
Yeah, there you go, Tom Kelly.
Tom. Anyway, you know, his stance is that we are administration heavy, and I have heard that before, and I also know we spend way more per student than a lot of other states that are getting better outcomes. There's other states have students that are performing much better than ours for a lot less money. So the money's not being spent effectively. And so we need to look at, okay, where are we spending it at? What are we spending it on? And how do we improve it? Because, you know, kids are our future, and we're seeing today, we're reaping the, you know, quote unquote benefits of just allowing schools to run amok and teach our kids whatever unions and the federal government are pushing. And we've got to get that back under control. And it also has to start at a parental level, which it has happened a lot in the country. Parents are stepping up, and that's one good thing that's come from all of the, in my opinion, negative things that's happened from Biden being in office. It's emboldened the leftists, and they're really ramped up their efforts. And couple that with COVID and parents actually getting to see what their children are being taught by the teachers over the computer. And it's been a huge awakening in this country. And I think that's a good thing. And I believe in the long run, this is all going to benefit us. But, you know, as a legislator, I just believe that I need to empower our state to examine this thoroughly. And, you know, I don't want to cut money if it's going to hurt students, but you can't tell me that we're getting a poor outcome spending twice as much as another state, that that money's actually benefiting the student. And I think one big thing we can do is implement school choice, where if a student leaves a public school and goes to a private school or a charter school or a home school, the money follows them. Competition breeds quality. And that's what we need, I think, in Wyoming, is competition. And I believe we do need charter schools, even though I have heard one of the opponents of Tom Kelly say she thoroughly was against that.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Actually, I did an episode about her. I mean, that's she is totally in the pocket for, you know, the Wyoming Education Association and, you know, teachers unions. And you know, you're right. That's one of the biggest problems with American education is that we're pushing the agenda of unions, and we're not really paying attention to what kids need. You know, in Wyoming, like, my favorite statistic is that over the last 10 or 15 years, enrollment in Wyoming schools has actually gone down about 1,900 students. And we're talking over, you know, over several years. But during that same time period, administration and staff has gone up 3,600 positions. So not only did we lose students, but we increased staff over and above what we had, even that was needed to cover those students that we lost.
Wow. And
yeah, it's amazing. And I doubt very seriously that the bulk of that $20,000 per student ends up in the classroom. My guess is it goes more to administration than it does the kids. So tell me about my favorite subject, things that go boom. What do you think? What do you think the state can do to strengthen our Second Amendment rights?
Well, I believe that, and I am a huge Second Amendment supporter. And I would like to clarify one thing that gets thrown around a lot about the Second Amendment. Our Second Amendment rights and all of our rights come from God.
Yes, sir.
And if a person's an atheist, I tell them, okay, well, you can say it's a natural right if that makes you feel better, but I believe they come from God. And the Constitution and the Bill of Rights doesn't give us those rights. All they are there for is to prevent, to be a preventative against the government taking them away from us.
It's a list.
and we've allowed them to take away considerably when it comes to our Second Amendment rights. But what can we do? That was the question.
Yeah.
I believe we need to strengthen the SAPA law that was passed. And a lot of my fellow conservatives are receiving endorsements from Gun Owners of America. And I'm fine with that. I haven't. I don't know why. It could be the fact that I was pretty critical in my survey of how they handled all that, where, in my opinion, if you're going to go into a state, you need to work with the group that's there if you're both on the same side. And because when we're fighting with each other, that just helps the enemy. And the enemy is the people who want to do away with the Second Amendment or take our gun rights away in any way. And I also, as you know, on my website, I believe that I'm a member of the Wyoming Gun Owners and mm-hmm. their national organization. So I'm not too concerned about endorsements. I don't know how much people pay attention to them. I just, you know, try to get my name out there, and I work for a living, so I have limited canvassing door-to-door time. But, you know, David, when I go to houses in my district and I meet people, if they're not a liberal, the minute they find out that I'm a working-class truck driver, they're ready to vote for me because sure, they're sick sure. of what's going on in Wyoming and in our country. And they believe, like I do, that we need more regular people in our government, people that's had to work for a living and had to live under the rules that government puts on us.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned the SAPA law. And, you know, honestly, the only thing that's standing in between those red flag gun laws that our congresspeople passed on to us and us is that SAPA law. And, you know, I think you're right. We all ought to focus on the main target, which is protecting the rights that were given to us by God. Period. I mean, it's no more complicated than that.
Exactly.
All right. So if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that, Don?
Okay. I'll give you three ways real quick. My phone number is 307-287-8379. And I talk Southern, so y'all ought to be able to keep up on that. My email is truckerdon4wyoming, just spell out F-O-R, 4wyoming, @gmail.com. And then I have a website, donodum4wyoming.com. And I'm on Facebook, so you can find me if you want to. I'll answer questions, or you can call me. My website has my positions on most of the major issues people care about. And if your issue's not on there, then feel free to shoot me an email or pick up the phone and call.
All right, Don. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to visit with me. And you're welcome to come back anytime you like. Just keep us updated on how your race is going.
I appreciate it. And I would just encourage any other candidates out there, say what you mean and mean what you say and stick to it. People will respect you even if they don't always agree with you.
Hear, hear. Well, have a good night, Don.
Thank you, David. You too.
Well, that'll do it for this installment of Weekend Update. Have a good rest of your weekend, and we'll talk again on Monday. From the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is Cowboy State Politics.